Recording, we're rolling.
I am just wandering around in my the garden bit. I don't know. It's, you've seen this, right?
Yeah.
Like the section between all the condos and stuff. Yeah.
You're so clearly in China or Hong Kong because of these sort of like the housing development style that they got there with the huge high rises, but there's like green space in between them, and you don't really see that here.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we're like lucky, right? Because a lot of the places in, you know, these really much more dense areas of the city, it's just like a building and a building and a building and a building, right? And they don't really have like this kind of giant soccer field sized garden in the middle of them. But I would say like Hong Kong has a lot of the public facilities and the public parks are really good. So the government is able to get that done, which is actually quite impressive. So, you know,
yeah.
Good for them. It's not too bad. It's not too bad. Like, you know, somebody was telling me, you know, somebody who recently moved to Hong Kong from North America, like, you know, maybe about a year ago, I was just chatting with this guy. And he said, this city is, I find, he says, like, people in Hong Kong are just, like, angry and depressed and sad all the time. I was kind of like, I thought he was talking about it from the perspective of like, it's a, because the stock market was down or something like that. And, you know, the sort of the heyday of Hong Kong is gone. And that was it to an extent, but I think he more meant it just from the perspective that like the city is an oppressive thing. Like it's very, it's obviously very dense. It's high pressure. Rent costs a fortune. And I think
where's
it's just
he,
like urban life.
Like specifically, like, is he from like the burbs or where's he from?
He is from the burbs in, I don't know, somewhere in California.
Yeah. I knew it.
Yeah. See, so like
New
Yorker,
I have this theory. We just came back from vacation in like Montana, which is very rural.
Yeah.
And I love it. I loved it there just because.
Oh, I saw those pictures. Those pictures are amazing, man.
It's amazing. And so I've never been to Montana before. And the thing I love about it is just all that land is literally just open. And for you to explore, like, I mean, you're just driving on the highway. If you're interested in a particular area, there's turnoffs and country routes.
Yeah.
And you just take your truck or SUV. You go right off and there's gravel paths that go deep into the wilderness. And back there, you'll find lakes and hidden parks and, you know, old buildings and fields and all this stuff. Everything's open. Okay.
These are like actual paths, right? Like they're like somewhat roads. They're not.
They're gravel
like
roads. They're country roads.
Okay.
Yeah.
They're proper
roads.
So there's like a delineation.
Compare that to the city.
Yeah.
Now I know the city. You know, you come back to New York City and you're like, oh, it's the complete opposite. But on the other hand, the city is also full of sort of like public spaces. There's parks. There's shops. The streets are there for you to walk. You know, it's like everything's open to you. It's the fucking suburbs where everything's closed. Everything's closed off in the suburbs. Nothing's open for you. There's just a few roads to drive through, of course.
Fair.
But all the property's privately owned, and aside from the shopping center, like everything's off limits. There's no. Suburbs are worse than others, but I think like Long Island, for example, is like the worst place on earth because there's literally no parks in Long Island. None. There's no public space.
I mean, I kind of hear you, but you know, just as I was talking to the guy, I was kind of like sympathizing with him on some level. As a maybe it's just what you're used to, but as a suburbs guy who lived in the Toronto suburbs or near suburbs for many years, I was kind of like, yeah, you know, sometimes I wish it just had a little bit more space and wasn't getting like trampled. I don't know. I'm not sure if it's something that's it's just what you're used to. Like I don't know. You've lived in New York for how long? Like 20 years at this point?
20, almost 25 years.
But you were in like Maryland or whatever before then, right? Which
suburbs.
I assume is much more suburban.
Yeah,
like,
very
was that,
suburban.
Was there like an adjustment period to that or was it just kind of okay?
I mean, I was in my 20s, so adjustment periods lasted about 24 hours.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Then you're adjusted. So,
yeah.
No, not really. I had long wanted to get the fuck out of the suburbs. I hated the suburbs.
Oh.
So.
Yeah.
I really don't. Well, and to this day, to I hate the suburbs. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you'd adapt well to Asia. Or Hong Kong specifically. Or Singapore. Or like.
I've only been to Hong Kong once and I really liked it. I thought it was just a really. It's like endless exploration. It's a really. And nothing looks the same. Everything's different.
Yeah.
And it's like. It's like the sort of like internal dimensionality of a hyperdense city where it's very small, but there's so much to do.
You know? Yeah. Like there's like if you go to Central, it's like Manhattan, right? Mm-hmm. And then right off Central, you have the Peak, which is like this. It's pretty far up. Like you can see the top.
You mean
like
Victoria Peak?
Yeah. Like mm-hmm. you can see the top of like a 100-floor skyscraper. Like you're like eye level with it.
Right. Yeah, so it's a beautiful place.
It's actually really nice. And then you go further north into like new territories, and you can be like a seaside fishing town, and like smell the fish. You can smell the fish.
Yeah,
right? Like
what they don't have is these extensive suburbs. They don't have the way in America we have these extensive layers of suburbs that I think have all sorts of problems, but.
I mean, certainly not in the American style. I've heard there are some suburbish-like things, but even then, they're kind of like Asian-style suburbs where your house is still kind of vertical, right?
Yeah.
Rather than horizontal. We just bought a car, so I'm very...
Oh, what'd you end up getting, by the way?
We got a BYD Sea Lion.
That's which a is pretty like, high-end SUV in the lineup, right? In the BYD lineup? Is it BYD or Biati?
In English, it's BYD.
BYD, okay.
yeah. In Chinese, it's Biati.
I've heard some people say Biati in English. Yeah. I guess
That's close enough, yeah.
To
be more cultured. I think it's pretty okay. I'm pretty happy with the choice. We don't get, like, the full range of Chinese EVs here, unfortunately. So, I mean, my choices were, like, really slim pickings. For some reason, they seem to have, they're slowly drifting into Hong Kong, but I think...
Look this up.
I think because it's right-hand drive here, and it's a really small market, right? So they're kind of like, meh. They're kind of meh on this market, which I can understand. Mm-hmm. But BYD is big enough, and they sell in Australia and, you know, Malaysia, UK, all that, so they have the right-hand drive thing down.
Okay, I see. It kind of looks like a Porsche. It's
yeah,
kind of a Porsche look.
Yeah, it's got like the Cayenne coupe look sort of thing, right?
Cayenne look, yes, it looks like a Cayenne.
Yeah. It actually looks pretty nice. I actually like it. And it was
is the headroom good. It looks, if anything, it looks like the headroom might be a little bit low, but I can't.
In the back seats, it's a little lowish. Because
it's got like, the raked line.
Yeah, the rake line.
Yeah,
yeah.
But you have little girls. Who cares?
Yeah, so they're fine. They're fine. Like, I can sit back there fine. The kids can sit back there fine. It's going to be fine. The trunk is not, like, gigantic. But then I was thinking, you know, this is a car I'm going to use in Hong Kong. I don't need to, like, go to Costco, right? Or Home Depot. So I just need to throw enough stuff for, like, a day at the beach. In the back of
Are you cool with the right-hand drive in Hong Kong? You're okay with that?
It was weird as shit.
Holy it's weird, God. Dude.
It was so weird.
Weird. You know, I drove in the UK. It was strange.
So let me ask you, like, is the turn signal stock on the right of the steering wheel?
No, if I remember, everything is the same in terms of instrumentation.
Yeah.
And I drove a manual, and the gear placement's the same. So... To get to first gear, you push out rather than pull in. Yeah.
Oh, that's weird as hell.
Oh, that was the weirdest part, was that. And then, so imagine you land in the UK, and then everything's reversed, except the instrumentation is the same. And then you're fine until you get to, like, a traffic circle or, like, a complex intersection with, like, three roads. And you're like, wait, where am I supposed to head here? The chances of me going into the wrong way of a street was very high. So,
are very high, or shifting into like fifth, right?
Or shifting into fifth gear, exactly. Yeah, shifting into first gear when you're looking for fifth, you know.
Yeah, like while turning to the wrong side of the road, it's just like, okay, this is just gonna go really pear shaped really quickly. We're you know, with that, I think we're gonna go be able to do a lot more exploring in Hong Kong.
Yes,
I might go check out some of the like further up. They call it new territories or whatever.
How reasonable is it for you to take that car through the border and go
actually,
drive
yeah,
into China?
Yeah, apparently you can do it. Apparently, like my wife's looking into it because she was talking to like some of the other mm-hmm. sort of neighbors around here, and they're like, oh yeah, you can just do it. You can either go through Shenzhen or you can go through Zhuhai, mm-hmm. Through Macau. And yeah, apparently you can do it. But then like, okay, I'm going to be driving a right-hand drive car. And in this car, the turn signal stock is on the right of the steering wheel. So it's like a complete
flip.
Oh,
weird. That's weird.
Yeah, it's a complete flip. Except for one thing, which really bugged me. They didn't flip the mirrors. So, like, you know, the outside sort of side view mirrors?
Yeah.
Normally, the driver's side one is supposed to be flatter, and the passenger side, so the far side one from you, is supposed to be convex, right? So if you think like in North America, yep. right, like your right side mirror is wider.
So they didn't change that.
They didn't flip it.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, it's just like
that's
this.
The price.
That's
you
annoying.
HK
I know.
Plays for you know they should flip. They should be like Sweden.
They should be flipped.
Or one day they just flipped everything back to what
and
I call
this,
the
this place
correct
will never
way.
Do it. I know. I yeah. agree with you. It would be the correct way. Even I would just like rebuy my car. I'd be okay.
The only but, other yeah. people is it only. I think it's just Japan that does the British way in
no,
Asia.
Singapore, Malaysia. Singapore, Malaysia.
Oh, you're right. Fuck. They're the other way too. Shit.
They're also like British-ish, right?
Former all, British, yeah.
Basically, it's all the British. All the British places and Japan.
I remember when I was in China, Shan's cousin took us on a little road trip out to the western side.
Yeah.
We went west into a little bit deeper into like how far we went pretty far west into Guangdong province.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I remember, dude, first of all, the highways are like super modern. They're more modern than like Canada
yeah.
or US.
Yeah.
And then I saw a sign where there was an interchange. And you know, like it'll be like I don't know in Canada what they say like Hamilton this way.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever. They had a sign, and it said Vietnam this way, and kind of funny. It said Hanoi this way, Hanoi Vietnam this way, all other traffic this way. And I was like, "That's crazy. That's crazy." I don't know. I didn't expect that ever to see a sign that just sort of had like,
just like
two
Hanoi.
Left lanes to Vietnam. You know,
and then,
like
it was, and then like the right lanes are like not Vietnam.
Yeah, right lanes are like, yeah, through traffic. And I was like, that's crazy,
that's
you know?
That's
like, I want to go on a road trip in China just to see signs like that where they're like, you know, two left lanes to Xinjiang, right, you know, three right to continue.
I want to do that. Like, I want to do, like, the road trip through China.
Let's do it. When your girls are in college and shit, and you guys are empty nesters, we'll go grab a large car and we'll go to Tibet.
Yeah, we should. We should get like a camper. My wife already wants to get a camper. Like,
We're going to have to do two campers.
That's fine.
I can't share a camper with two other people. It's too intimate.
We'll have to do two campers.
We'll tell them.
Two
so
vans.
That when we're driving, we can be together, but then at night, we'll unlink them, and then I can just shower and whatever in my own camper. Though I heard in China, I need to sleep in my own camper. I heard in China, the infrastructure for this stuff is good. They have a lot of rest stops with like clean bathrooms and showers, so you don't
and
have
like
to.
You have the water electricity hookups and all that stuff.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
That should be good. Like they have, they just get like these basically like Sprinter van conversions, right?
Yeah.
And those would be pretty awesome, but yeah, like my wife's been kind of like she would jump all over that. She's
that's good. Your wife is like active. She's like active and sprightly, which is very nice. I like there's some people who are as they get older, it's like they lose energy and they're like, I'm not into that. I don't want to do that. You know,
I think she is really enjoying the fact that we moved here. That's
awesome.
Which is good. Like possibly more than me. I'm enjoying it. Although I'm not a generally happy person. So, you know, so I'm just like, yeah, it's
I'm
okay.
not what you
I
might call enjoying life.
Yeah. It's like, huh, do I like this? Let me check my spreadsheet. I'm pretty much that guy, right? But she's really taken to it, I think. And I kind of rely on her for like my social organization. So, you know, she keeps saying this, and I'm like I've been okay. So I'm turning 40 this year, right? So,
what month?
Soon. It's this summer.
You're a summer baby.
I'm a summer baby. Like I'm turning 40 like imminently. The crisis is beginning. So extreme that. And I'm like, okay, I got another 10 years, and then the kids will be out of here, and then what? And how do I, like, whatever I want to answer for the what do I do after the kids are gone, I kind of feel like I have to start making preparations for that now, you know?
Why?
Because if it's...
What do you mean, well, make preparations?
Like, I think for it's what? Like, if the answer is, okay, I'm just going to like pack it up and retire and, you know, go out and do whatever, then I should start making some preparations for whatever that means. I don't know. Like have some sort of idea, right? If my answer after they're gone is, okay, I'm going to still take like some kind of entrepreneurial risk and still push in career wise or something like that, then I have to go a different direction. But I find it hard to even know what I want to do. Especially because, like, right now, the only thing that I can do is just, like, go to work and raise my kids. Right? It's – I don't know. Is this making sense? It's just, like, the present
– Yeah, you're looking at a horizon – you're looking at a period beyond the horizon of your current programming. You know?
Yes.
It's like
– Yes, yes. Yeah. The reality of the present does not allow me to prepare for whatever future that I would hypothetically want.
Mm.
Right? Mm-hmm. And I don't have an answer.
I understand because I'm kind of thinking about the same thing myself. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because come February, I was just telling Shan this the other day. I think there's a high likelihood that I'll probably just resign come February. You know, into the void.
Right.
That doesn't mean I can't work anymore, but like. I think my days as a firm-based lawyer are fucking over, dude. I can't grind out another 2,000 hours. Like,
that sounds brutal.
It's not my age. It's my mindset. Like, do I have the energy? Sure. But do I have do I give a shit? No. I mean, if I really needed the money, yeah. But I'd be like, what's his name? In Kevin Spacey in what was it called? Not The Big Short. Whatever that other movie was, where he was like, dude, I need you to stay at least another year to get me to see this through.
Oh,
and he was like, as surprising as it is, I'll do it, but not because of your little speech. But I actually need the money. He was like, after all these years, you know, as like a highly paid MD here, I still need the money. So yeah, sure, and. That was it.
It's like that's a horrible position to be in. And yeah. I somewhat to be. Well, I don't know. Like I unfortunately like that's. I kind of sound like a dick here because that is the position that the vast majority of people are in. That like I need the money is the position that the vast majority of people are in, right? So
yes,
and even me to some extent. Like Hong Kong's expensive to live in, right?
Yeah.
So and I've got a 10-year window that I still got to like probably live in Hong Kong for. So, you know, that costs a fair chunk of change.
The only reason though, like I'm not that sympathetic because I am sympathetic, but like, dude, honestly, a lot of my friends who are like, you know, in the raising kids and you know, grinding and they have young kids and they're in their mid 40s and all this shit.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, but you're complaining about the cost of college. You're complaining about the cost of everything. But on the other hand, you're going to Hawaii in like once a year. You're going to fucking Park Bail. City, Utah to go skiing once or twice a year. You're going to Disney cruise. You know, like,
yeah.
You're spending a shitload of money that's discretionary. I don't really feel sorry for you all. You know what I mean?
I hear you. It's still a position of privilege, right? But as we've discussed this sort of many times, it's like the privilege of the high-end wage cut. Something along those lines, right?
Yeah, because they assume a burn rate that's pretty high. They're not willing to take, you know, cheaper domestic vacations.
Of course. Like, you know, it's not like you have $100 million, right? It's not like that kind of sort of complete insulation type of thing.
I don't even think you need $100 million, man. I think total insulation for me, $10 million would be total insulation and living a very nice lifestyle. You know,
without kids,
the level I'm
true.
At is like my current burn rate, which is super low. Is fine, right? But I can't shift up my consumption pattern to like, all right, well, let's do the La Vida Loca now. I can't do that.
Yeah, I honestly get like very little utility from spending more. Like, except with a few small exceptions, right? Like, okay, if I could like just spend proportionally the same per square foot and just rent a bigger place for like the same cost per square foot, then you can argue, okay, maybe I get something out of that, right? Like I buy an extra 100 square feet in a very abstract sense, right? But other than that, it's like, there's nothing. It's like food is just food. The car, I bought a Chinese EV with a tax credit, right? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. It was half the price of the competing BMW.
Right.
So like the BMW was never like really
crazy
consideration. It's insane. It's like half.
China's just gonna dominate.
It's insane. It's like, yeah, look, there's some aspects in which the BMW is better, but it's not. There are some aspects in which it's worse, firstly, right? And secondly, like I'm not paying double. Anything else? Like I don't buy fancy shit. I guess I spend a lot of money on vacations sometimes if I go skiing. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the only thing.
But even vacationing in Asia is cheaper, isn't it?
It is so mm-hmm. much cheaper. We went to Guizhou like a couple of months back, and
I saw some of the pictures. It looked amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing there. Like, admittedly, it's one of the poorer provinces, so like costs are sort of innately lower. But I think we spent for a family of four, staying at like pretty damn nice places, like some really nice hotels. For a week, I don't know what did we spend. It was like $2,500 Canadian, something like that.
Yeah,
for a family of four for a week.
That's like, not bad.
It's not
and
bad
a,
at all.
Like a nice not place, like a
nice
like
place,
like a hot yeah,
like
yeah,
yeah. These are like you went to this really nice sort of hostel thing, and you got like a suite, and it was I don't know, it was like 40 square meters or something like that, right? We didn't care about any like we weren't watching our spending, right? And it's just the options here are just so much better. Like, part of me still can't believe sometimes that I moved here. it's actually wild. I don't know. Like sometimes when I'm so you know that half asleep stupor state.
Yeah.
That you know.
I was sort of in it right as this podcast started because.
Oh really. Oh, I get it. Like I get it. Like as I'm trying to fall asleep, this is like 11:30 at night kind of thing, right? Like
I do know where your mind starts going in weird places.
Your mind
places.
Wanders. I know.
Yeah.
And like that, I always lately get this like, oh my god, I've moved here. Sudden thought that comes in my mind, and then the next thought is like, holy shit, what am I gonna do? And then I don't have an answer to that.
I suspect that means like part of your subconscious still has not fully accepted or grasped the gravity of what you've done.
I think it's
because I think it's a big fucking deal, man. Like,
it
you're,
is a big deal. Like,
not just for you, but like the future arc of your children is completely different. Though I think for the better.
Different.
But
I
you're raising
for the
like
better.
Basically, it's almost like some quantum shit where there's like you are at a juncture. Like the day that you and your wife sat down and decided finally, like, okay, are we going to do this or not? Like that day, your two girls basically shifted into an alternate timeline.
Oh, we shifted like the multiverse or something.
Yeah. And so the two people they were going to become basically their wave function completely collapsed.
Mm.
That's no more. And then the wave function of these two other young women that prior didn't exist, just suddenly sprung into being. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, like I hope that, I mean, that was always a theory, right? Like the reason that sometimes I give people when they, because you know, like a lot of people are just like, what? You moved here? You know, they're kind of like that. From Canada?
Wait, a lot of people in Hong Kong say that? Or
in Hong Kong. In Hong Kong. In Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'll say that. And I'm like...
As in, like, why would you do that?
Yeah. And I kind of tell them, I'm like, well, the reason that I think resonates the most with them, because they can understand it, like, most naturally, is that, like, look, if I can open a second road for my kids by moving here, right? Because they can always move back to Canada. That's always, in principle, possible. Right.
Right.
But if they didn't come here now, then they could never come here later, really.
And yeah. That would be very, very difficult. I think so. I think that's right. I think it's harder to go the other way.
I think it is harder to go
the other way. It could, but it wouldn't be the same. They'll have that sort of like native.
Yes.
That sort of like native sense of, you know, home there.
Yeah. But then in that like sort of half asleep, crazy stupor thing, I'm still like, oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. What do I do now? It's just like, holy crap. They have to like go to university and then find a job. Find a job where?
Yeah.
Here?
Mm-hmm.
In Canada? There's like no good choices right now. I don't like that. That does give me some degree of anxiety.
Wait, what's no good choices? What are you talking about?
Well, okay. Like I'm not particularly bullish on Canada right now. Right. Obviously. And working in Asia is tough. It really is tough, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, look, there's still a lot of people who want to leave Asia or want to leave China and go to the U.S. or Canada or whatever because it's just easier, right? Like, from a how much you work, how hard you work versus how much you make, raw numbers perspective, it is easier in North America. There's no doubt about that, right?
For sure.
And that's still kind of true. So what do I do? What do I tell my kids 10 years from now? I don't know. That I don't know. And then, like, could I... Like,
but 10 years from now, they're going to be decision makers.
They're going to be
able to make their own decisions.
Yeah, it was like...
In fact, they're probably going to want to make their own decisions and not...
They're going to want to, but that doesn't mean... Like, look, when I was 20 years old, I was not very good at making my own decisions.
No, but what I mean is the question of what do I tell them? Well, you're going to have your own opinion on their decision making, so you're going to tell them what you think of their decisions.
Sure, you know? But like I don't know what to I don't know what to tell them other than I'm like, well, instead of one shitty choice, I've given you two. Congratulations. This is all very doomer.
That's not your fault. That's the fucking world.
Hey, I tried, right?
Yeah,
but I don't know. Like I still have some degree. I still have some degree of anxiety.
Here's the thing. I think also we graft our own generational culture onto the young people. I think, honestly, I really do think young people are radically different these days. They really are different from us. Their expectations of life is different.
In what sense?
I think they care much less.
Gen Alpha, right? Yeah, okay. Like post-2000 kids.
Yeah, I mean, there's always generational gaps, but I do think that They are legitimately more liberated from the rat race than we were. They have much less expectations of careerism and all that. They really are more like sort of I don't want to generalize too much, but I think they really are more interested in just sort of living a bit more free.
You mean like you're seeing this in like your cousins or sorry nephews?
Yeah, and I'm seeing this in I'm reading about it. I it's hard for me to say I'm seeing it in real life because I don't really interact with younger people like in that range. You know, like I don't know, and I don't really talk to my friends' kids that much. But what I've read is that. They're just maybe because they're a little bit more self-centered or something. I don't know what it is, but they're not in a rush to like join a corporation. They're not in a rush to like join a segment of society. They kind of want to just do their own thing. I did notice a big drop off though between my generation And the one sort of immediately after it, which was like older millennials, they were even different than Gen X. And I think that that trend has accelerated primarily because the career ladder, the career conveyor belt started to break down.
Yeah, that's
true. You know what I mean?
That's true. That's true.
Like I will say, like, the whole thing kind of started it up again, but that's breaking down now too.
Yeah. I will say, like, older gen, I guess it's probably some kind of gradual process, because, like, I do find Gen X people in the that I've run into in the workplace, they do tend to be very, like, they're very corporate. Like, they're very much corporate guys. Okay. Compared to, I find anyway, compared to, like, people my age. Actually, like, when I started working, I kind of landed in a situation where there was me and there were, I think, four or five other people who were all plus minus 1 year of me, right? We all kind of started at the same time. And just like kind of tracing out the career trajectories of these people that I've known for getting on 20 years now versus our bosses at the time who were generally Gen X people is just like, okay, just looking at all the personalities is like, yeah, those Gen X guys were dedicated careerists. They believed in the company, or they, you know, maybe like cynically believed in the company, but a lot of the millennials are starting to drop out.
Yeah.
Right.
I think that's a big story just generally is like, I don't know about, see, China might be different because they're like in a different part.
Different phase. Yeah.
Yeah. Of their national trajectory. But in the West, and I think I would include probably Hong Kong in that.
That's probably fair.
I think people are just less committed to the whole project, you know, like they're just... Like, even my own fucking boss is constantly telling me about how much he hates the job and wants to quit. And
how old is he?
I think in some ways was looking for me and or other people to, like, replace her so she could have, a sort of gentler exit, you know? This is just common talk now between employees and stuff is, like, how much they want to just get out.
Is your boss about the same age as you?
Yeah. She is. I think she's slightly older or something. We're pretty much the same age.
Okay.
And we have similar friends. She's like, she wants to get out. She's a British citizen.
Yeah.
And she's like, she's like, I want to get out and just go
move
back
to Portugal.
She wants to move to the UK, where she's like, cost of living is much lower, and not what? In London, but in London.
This
but like
is you're
in
like the boonies,
the countryside.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, and she was showing me house prices, and I was like, oh, that is cheap. You know, you could buy up a pretty nice landed property with, you know, like with land, you know, with like $400,000, you know.
That's not bad.
Not bad at all. And then free, you know, healthcare is, you know, included in your citizenship. So
Yeah, she's doing the dollar arbitrage here. All right, working in New York, making bucks.
Yes.
You know, going to spend it in UK ex London, which is like, not as, London's a different thing. I put it that way. So.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I'm looking forward to it. I was just thinking about. I had a whole conversation with DeepSeek about it and shit. You know? DeepSeek is a surprisingly good sort of like advisor slash counselor if you don't
Everybody's
take what it says very seriously.
Everybody's
and it's funny because you can change it. Like after a while, you're like, it has this sort of default setting where it feathers your ass a little bit, a lot actually.
Yeah.
And they're like, you've just cracked the code to life, you know. And I'm like,
you're
all right,
amazing.
Dude, what you're saying is not just wise, it's deeply profound and gets at the very heart of it. And I'm like, okay, dude, chill the fuck out. I need you to, like, not feather my ass, but,
be
a little bit more skeptical. Yeah. And then I'll put in my ideas, and they're like, but have you thought about this? What if your wife hates this? That's not going to – I was like, okay, no, chill out, dude. I don't need you to
– You like, need to be like
somewhere
Spock,
in between.
Right?
And then it found this in-between spot, and then I was like, okay. I was like, just ask me relevant questions. Don't feather my ass or try to depress
me. Yeah. Just be a sounding board.
Just be a sounding board.
So, what's your plan? What's on the horizon for the semi-retired team?
Yeah, I think it's a soft retirement plan, you know, where I'm like, I was like, dude, I cannot go on. Like, I can't, I don't have the mental. It's not that I'm too tired. It's that I simply my brain, for better or worse, is just not wired to grind out any more years in a high pressure environment. And
right, these you're last asking, what the fuck is the point?
Yeah, these last couple years have been total gifts to me because I'm basically in a super low pressure environment, but getting high comp, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And I've been spoiled. These 2 years have spoiled me, and I can't go back anymore. I just can't grind out. Not working for these partners at law firms that are all up in your shit. They're calling you on weekends. I don't hate these people. I think they're hardworking, conscientious people. But on the other hand, you know, they know that they're paying you and that they own you, and they talk to you with the clear understanding that they own you. And at this age, I'm like, dude, when I was in my 30s and grinding and like I was much more amenable to the idea that the seniors got me by the balls. And that's because, it, you know, I'm like, I'm junior. But now I'm like 47. I'm like, what, bitch, shut the fuck up. You know, like, bitch, shut the fuck up. I can walk out of this fucking room anytime I want. All right, bitch.
So I hear
clean up your attitude or say goodbye. That's my feeling with these people now. Once you even, because I'm not, I honestly would not have any financial, you know, sort of anxiety if I was just to walk out of that job one day because I couldn't take it anymore. Okay. That's not to say that I can just sit on my ass for the rest of my life with no issues. But I'm not that day going home. I'm like, yeah, fuck that bitch. But the horizon, I think, is I quit, and then I might start thinking about doing like partial year contract work,
right?
As sort of like maintenance income, just so I don't start immediately digging into savings.
Right. You just
but then doing
like...
shit I want to do. I want to go to China for like an extended trip just to see it. I want to go take the out here all around. I want to go to different cities. I want to meet up with people that I know only online, but I want to meet them in person, you know, like all that.
You know, you should just do it. You should just do it. Like I'm only 40 and I'm sitting here thinking like, I'm going to get, next 10 years, all right, fine, I got to raise my kids, you know, I got to get my HKPR, send the kids off to university. And they got like another 10 years of either I could retire or I, you know, could make one more sort of, if work is fine, then I do another one. And they're like, you know what? I'm not sure I'm even going to make, like, there's no guarantee I make it to 60. There's no guarantee, right? Like,
right.
The probability
that's true.
Of dying in your 40s is not that high, but it's also... like, it's not impossible, right? Or you get some health issues.
Not impossible.
Or you, you know, and
where like, it's not even necessarily that you die, but that let's say you're just not as able to travel.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly. Like your knee starts to go or something, right? Like, or even
you
you're not able
knees,
to
you
do
can't
the
really
things.
Walk. You can't hike.
Yeah. You can't hike. You can't ski or whatever. Like you can't bike ride or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Like, you, like time is not entirely fungible that way. Actually not extremely non-fungible in that sense. So like, I was just started thinking about like that way. Yeah. I don't know. This whole, like my entire life, I've kind of been very, very immigrant thinking, right? Save for the future, suffer now and enjoy later.
Extreme. You're like an extreme, like a fairly extreme mindset when it comes to delayed gratification, I think so. Luckily, I don't think your wife is like that. I feel like your wife is more of a
she is much more of a live in the moment type.
That's good. It balances.
Absolutely.
A good compliment.
I think it does balance out. Actually, I think this is actually kind of why I bought the car, right? Because I was kind of like, you know, because parking costs a fortune, right? Like the main cost of the car in Hong Kong is like parking, actually, right? But then, like, so I was kind of hesitating on the whole thing for like so long, and honestly, like, I've been in Hong Kong for about 2 years now, and like every so often I'll just like think about, hey, what can I buy, you know, in terms of a car. And then one day I was like, fuck, I'm just gonna get a car, you know what, because it's gonna save me 30 minutes a day, That's it. Right, and I kind of value this.
I can do this.
It's like I have this money.
I'm not even gonna notice this.
Right? Like,
yeah.
It was actually a very liberating thought. It was like, oh, I get my 30 minutes back. I just bought 30 minutes of my life back.
Right.
And as soon as I signed the paperwork for the car, that night I was still going home from work on the bus. And I was like, this fucking bus sucks, man. Like, we were like really stuffed into this bus. I was the last one to get on. And the door was basically like kind of closing around me and like almost clipped my backpack. So I was just kind of like standing out there. Right. And it's just, God, it was horrible. It was horrible. It was horrible. Time is precious, guys. Time is precious. You gotta use it. Like, I'm so frustrated by this thing, this whole time thing. And I was looking at, like,
money, and here's the thing. Ultimate equivalence, money is time. That's the ultimate equivalence. The real thing that it is it's time.
Yeah, and you should use money to buy it, to buy time.
Well, you use time to get it, so you have to get it back.
You have to get it back.
You were banking time, is what you were doing.
Yes. You gotta get out of the trade, basically.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, basically, in a weird way, that's the bleak part of it, right? Like, all this careerism, all the culture. I think to me, like, when you get older, you start seeing that all of that was sort of a story that was told to keep you in the game. So it's not necessarily bad in the sense that it's good to have that story.
Yeah, because it's, to keep it's, you in it's, the game. It's a form of cope. But it's a very form of
cope. Yeah, it's a form of cope. But when you're on the back end of it, you start seeing the sort of bigger picture, and it's like, look, you have to buy your freedom.
Yes.
You were not born free. You were born like poor or lower middle class or middle class, but you don't have the freedom to just have your time allotted, okay, to you, and you see fit. You've got to exchange your time for money because you simply don't have enough money to survive.
It's like for money because that's you need it. The money for food, and rent. But
you like, got to see. I think a lot of us lie to ourselves about the nature of our upbringing. I'm like, no, most of us were born poor. I don't care if you grew up in a nice house or whatever. If you have to work, that means if you didn't work, you wouldn't survive.
Yes. You were not landed. You were working class.
Right, that's why I feel like upper middle class. This is the danger, I think.
Because you think you're at escape velocity, or you think you're safe, or something.
Yeah, I think that, like, to be honest, a lot of the kids close to me that my friends, family.
You mean growing up, right?
The way I see them be,
or today.
Yeah, the way I see. You know what it is? It's like the parents came from a middle class background, and they were either first or second gen, and so they grew up they grew up sort of on the outside of society, while all their peers were living a better lifestyle in a way because they were more assimilated, they knew more what to do, and now they're really compensating by giving their kids all of that, right? But I fear that I don't know if this is actually going to happen, but I fear that their kids are going to be confused because the kids are going to be used to, and I already see this in the kids that I do interact with.
Yeah.
They really don't know what the fuck money is, and they can't even tell the difference between expensive and cheap, and some of them are... like it's almost like the parents shield them from the idea of value,
right? Like they don't force the kids to understand like budgeting or something, right? Like
it's all psychological, like, you know, hey, if you want it, if it means something to you, do it.
The cost of the kid is how much time they have to spend complaining to the kid, to the parents, right?
So I'm like, okay, but here's my question. It's like, okay, great, you've got the kids with what you think is a high sense of self-esteem about their own relative value and how they only deserve the best. But it's like, are you going to pay for everything from college through grad school and maybe beyond that? And they tell me, no, I can't afford to. After college, they're on loans at that point.
Right.
And I'm like, Why? You know, because with all the money, I think with a lot of the money that they blew on
going to Hawaii,
stuff, you could have saved that money and provided them a buffer to pay for, at least in part, grad school, rather than say you're on your own with loans. Because now it's like you front loaded all this sort of luxury lifestyle up front, and then later it's like, sorry, bro, now you're on debt. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
what's that about?
See, that seems like bad decision making to me.
Terrible. And
but like, I can also understand it, because then you think, well, like, Disney is now, and grad school is in 20 years. So,
yeah, but is it? But ultimately, though, who's the? That's my question. Is who is it really all for?
Yeah. Like, no. I think that's the key, right? Like,
who is it really all for? I think it's for the fucking parents.
They're living their own childhood vicariously. Their idealized childhood.
And they disguise it. I think it's this is what I think, all right? I think that a lot of that behavior is covert self-indulgence, in the sense that it's pure self-indulgence for the parents, but they're disguising it as altruism for their children. And in fact, it's not. It's not helping their children. It's not good for their children. And they lie to themselves. They don't really want to confront that fact, because they want to protect the ability for them to basically blow money now and not really have to think about the consequences later. And it's very selfish. That's my opinion. And I see the results. I see the results. I'm like, dude, your kids are not prepared for the real world. If they were loaded rich, sure. If they didn't have to worry about...
How old are these kids that you're like thinking about?
The one I'm thinking about in particular is in college.
Ah, okay. It's a little bit late to.
And the other one is approaching college.
Okay. It's a bit later. Like, my kids are younger, obviously, but like the two of them, you know, they have very different concepts of money. Like, mm-hmm. So we did this thing where we would let them open. They would open like little convenience stores, right? So we take them to like the grocery store or whatever, and they would buy, you know, candy or chips or whatever, stuff like, you know, mints and whatever in bulk, right? Bring it home. And then they would set up little shops in their own rooms and mark up the prices and try to sell them and try to sell. And I would just patronize their shops. Right. Mm-hmm. But the older one is like very diligently keeping her books, you know, is ensuring that, you know, every single item is profitable. And she doesn't take her, like, whatever revenue she makes, she doesn't like just spend it willy nilly, right? She's thinking about, okay, looks like I didn't quite buy the right thing this time because my customers didn't like it. So I'll like change what I buy the next round. Wow. The younger one is just like, oh, I got some spare money. Let me go to my sister's store and buy some stuff.
I think I think your daughters are going to be okay.
Yeah, like, they have totally different conceptions of this. Like, they're raised in the same environment, but they just have completely different personalities. And the younger one, bless her heart, she like I get home from work and she'll like give me this can of like fizzy water or something, or Schweppes or whatever.
Yeah.
And she'll say, "Hey, Daddy, I bought this from my sister's store for you." I'm like, while I certainly appreciate this, you're gonna go bankrupt. And we tried to do this to teach them like how to you know, teach them something about money. But
right,
it's just like, okay, I've learned that the second one is not very good at it. We need remedial work here. It's so hard. So I think the older one's like very profitable. The younger one's in a hole.
Right. Well, every business has a loss leader. You know what I mean?
I know. But I just wonder, like, is it innate to, like, there's a nature versus nurture thing here. I'm just kind of like pondering on.
I don't think so. I think money is mostly a learned relationship. Mm. That's my opinion. Because money's an artificial construct. So I think our relationship with it is also artificial.
But in the sense of like delayed gratification ability, right? Like, that is that not
I see.
You know? Like the older one's also very, very good at not scratching mosquito bites. Like, so she's got whatever it is, persistence. Mm-hmm. Or mm-hmm. something. I don't know, man. It's like
I don't think people, children are not going to be able to learn the lesson through lessons. You know, like, I think you give them the financial literacy. That's one thing. You know what I mean? Yeah. But like, you're doing the most. Are you at like a
vending machine?
I don't know why that's so. That's like. Wow. Is there Kalpis in there or no?
No. There's something called like what is that? Aquarius. But it's like some kind of electric.
Aquarius. Thing. Yeah. It's the similar. Yeah. Aquarius.
Yeah. Something like that. This is a.
Yeah.
It's actually quite overpriced. It's kind of lime flavored fizzy water. $8 Hong Kong.
That's not overpriced. That's not too bad.
Dude, I bought a tall boy of Sapporo today for $8 Hong Kong.
Dude, a soda, like a melon soda in downtown Manhattan is $3 US.
Really? Like a 355 can?
Like the big can you have right there.
Really?
My God. It's $3 for a soda.
That's horrifying.
I mean, admittedly, a Japanese melon soda, so it's not just a regular can of Coke.
Okay.
Still, it's $3.
That's a little bit premium, I guess.
Like
the sort of bougie way.
No, but what I'm saying is with the thing, it's like I don't think you can provide them financial literacy, but I don't think you can teach them the relationship with money because they haven't worked yet. And it's not until you're really out. I don't think any of this stuff is learnable until you are out on your own paying your own bills and realizing at a deep level that you are relying on yourself.
Restrictions. Yeah. You have restrictions.
I cannot.
You need to convert your time into money.
This is not a little excursion that is being subsidized by mom and dad. I'm on my fucking own. And that's something I feel like I think that what was important for me growing up was the degree to which my parents lied to me or hid their financial ability. And my parents are not rich, but they always had this expectation that like you're not moving back. I mean, you can move back in the house if you want and save money. That's the point.
Yeah.
But we're not subsidizing your life. Like you either fucking figure it out and you build your own life.
Yeah.
Or you're just the basement dweller in our house. You know, that's it. Right. And we're not going to be happy about that. And yeah, you won't be homeless, but you're going to feel like a total loser. And so I feel like I always was lucky in the back of my head. I always kind of knew like, I'm on my own. I got to do this. And then you start to have, I mean, you were like that. And then we start to have the sort of like deeper internal sort of like thinking conversations about like, all right, so what are the trade-offs here in terms of my commitment to careerism and, you know, my desire to have some freedom or make my own choices versus what my boss is telling me I got to do or what my career path is forcing me to do and all that. It's hard, man. Like, I feel like that was some of the hardest shit, continues to be some of the hardest shit.
How early was it for you? Like when you were thinking about the careerist versus I just want to seek freedom trade-off.
Second I got out of college.
Oh, that was really
the
early.
The fucking second I got out of college.
I was a couple of years later. Admittedly, several years later. Like, I don't know what I was thinking. I think it was at the very beginning. I think I was just trying to, like, make enough money to buy, like, a better car or something. It was very baseline 16-year-old simple shit.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, oh, I'm going to retire when I'm, you know. That came later. By the time I was like 27 or 28, I was like, okay, doing the projections.
I remember I had this. For me, this is the way it hit me. When I was in college, One of the big things for people to do was to go to these sort of like music festivals and stuff.
Yeah.
And one particularly popular act was the Dave Matthews Band. And so the Dave Matthews Band concerts were really popular.
Yeah.
And so I go to them. And I was like a big fan. I was like, wow, this is cool and whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Because when you were out there, it was like you and all these other like-minded people, and you're high, and you're just enjoying the thing, and nothing bothers you. You know, you're just happy.
Yeah.
And then after I graduated, I remember I was driving down University Boulevard near my college campus. This was like post-graduation. And then I started thinking about, like, all right, who am I? Like, what am I supposed to do now? And I had some job lined up that was going to pay me, like, whatever. And then it sudden dawned on me. I'm like, I'm a fucking nobody. Like, and then I thought about the Dave Matthews Band. And I was like, those motherfuckers make millions. I was like, how did they get themselves into this position? And they had this one, the bassist, this young kid. He was only like 19 years old or whatever. And I'm like, that kid is making millions. You know what I mean? And I started realizing, like, a lot of the shit, like when you were out there in the field, just like high off your ass, whatever, that they were racking up millions of bucks, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, the nature of the game, that's the real game, was not sitting there feeling good high off my ass with my friends, but it was in the ticket receipts. And that band, they're fucking set for life, and they're famous. And, you know, the kid, the bassist, is younger than me, but he's a multimillionaire, and he's got his whole life figured out. And I was just like racked with this whole thing of like, I have to fucking figure out my whole ass life right now. And it was really painful because in college, when I was like in those moments where you're with your friends and you're just in that perfect moment of relaxation and chill, and you're like, it's senior year, man, we got it all figured out. You don't. you're so far from having it figured out. And it was the hard transition from being a senior that had enough credits to graduate before the last semester. And so I was just taking golf, you know, and like I had like 12 credits lined up, and they were all bullshit classes. And I was just hanging out with my friends, and I was like, this is the life. This is the life. And I didn't do, I was like, dude, I did all the shit that I don't know what to call it, but basically the spoiled shit would do in college. You know, and just having the time of my life. I don't regret doing it, but it did set me up for a hard fucking dose of reality when I came out and realized that I had no status whatsoever. And all those, like, sort of utopian little thoughts that were going in my head about how great life is.
But, false. I mean, okay, sure, fair. Yeah. But there was probably nothing, like, your course selections would not have made any difference to that, ultimately. All right?
But my what?
Like, whatever courses you choose to do in your senior year,
it wasn't about that, right? No, it was more how I let myself into a very, like,
okay.
Really,
so it's
nice,
really about the okay. It was really about like the self deception of it.
Think of it this way: it's almost to me like a sort of like mini version of childhood itself. It's like why I fear for some of these kids is because my time in college, especially towards the end, it was so, I don't know how you guys had, but I just had such a good time in college. And a lot of it was, frankly, it was, it was due to fucking around, chasing tail, smoking weed, and having a good time. Okay. And there were moments where I was like, this is the fucking life right here. And then the second I got dumped out onto the street after college, a lot of it was like, how do I find my way back to that? Like, how do I get myself back to the point where I feel very little anxiety and stress, and I feel like everything is kind of right with the world? Because right now I'm like, shit, I got nothing. You know what I mean? I got nothing.
That's
I got
no
money,
fair.
No status.
That's fair. You're having less fun.
It's fucking freshman day one again, but this time it's not a 4-year program. It's until death.
It's an indefinite.
Yeah, I'm it's the indefinite. It's the first no, day I, of freshman I, year.
I, like, I distinctly remember this kind of like realization of, you know, one day I was like, oh God, in college, if you have a shitty course, it's going to be over in 4 months. But now you're in the real world. If you have like a shitty whatever, it's up to you to get rid of it.
Yeah.
To fix it or deal with it. I guess on some level, like it's kind of like what you were saying, right? Like the kids have to go and experience it themselves. Right. So
yeah,
might as well kind of. Yeah, I was thinking sometimes, you know, I want, if it's possible, I wouldn't mind if my kids kind of did a year. I don't know if this is exactly the same thing or if it would help in that way, but like after they graduate high school, if they just took like a gap year and went and like did something, not like bum around thing, but like do some kind of thing that isn't just going straight to university, right? Like that would, I think, in some way, I just feel like that would help. Like sometimes the university transition can be hard, but it's also like not really real world in some sense,
it is,
right?
Yeah,
it's a controlled environment. It's a highly, highly controlled environment.
I think they just got to avoid what my thing was, where you get into this like whole, I just really want to enjoy life and not have any worries and shit. Like you can't. I feel like that was my problem. Was like I shouldn't have done that. I should have tried to discover like something that I cared about and like, you know, like a deeper purpose rather than just like, man, it feels good to just fucking sit here with my friends and chill out, man. You know, like.
You know what I mean? I don't know.
Like, I think people maybe, with like a higher purpose is like, that's nice, but how much, but that is who I am. That's what I'm locked into, and that's kind of how I am from now. You know,
I don't know. I think you probably had. I'm kind of the other way around this.
This is the end of part one of a two-part podcast. The second part will be on the Patreon feed. If you want to support and get access to bonus pods, go to patreon.com/planamech.